Tonight our lesson is from Psalm 40. The Psalms are interesting. They're different than a lot of other parts of Scripture. So in the New Testament, when you read the Gospels, you're reading four different people's account of the life of Jesus. You read the Acts of the Apostles and you see Luke kind of recording the things that the apostles did. You read the epistles and you have different people writing to groups of people or to individuals about things. And there's a lot of teaching in there, a lot of doctrine. You look at Revelation, and that's God revealing to John the things that are to come. You see in the Old Testament, you see in the early historical books of the Bible, creation and Israel and all those things and the kings. A lot of those things are just written about other people or to other people. One thing that's interesting about a lot of the Psalms, which is you see a little bit of it in some of Paul's writings. The one thing that's different is that oftentimes a lot of the Psalms is an individual opening themselves up and showing you what's inside, telling you what they're feeling and what they're thinking and expressing their feelings and thoughts and experiences of God to us. And that's a really cool thing because we don't get to see that a lot of times. When Luke is telling the story of the apostles, we don't get to see what's in the apostles' minds. But when David is writing a psalm or Asaph or some of those others, oftentimes they're expressing very deep and intimate feelings and experiences and desires and failings from just pouring it out. And I think that's a really neat thing because we have those same kinds of feelings and same kinds of desires and same kinds of failings and same kinds of worries and things that the psalmist have. So it's a neat thing. And you see that in poetry in general and in songs in the world. Oftentimes poetry and songs are people expressing their feelings and their thoughts and their fears and their happiness and their joys and all of those things and their praises. And that's what you see in the Psalms. Here in Psalm 40, we have a psalm of David. So David, the king of Israel, wrote this song. And he says, I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined to me and heard my cry. He also brought me up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my steps. He has put a new song in my mouth, praise to our God. Many will see it in fear and will trust in the Lord. Here, David is kind of giving his testimony of his relationship with God and how God saved him. He talks about how he was in a horrible pit in a miry clay. And that's where we all are before we're saved. And God brings us to himself. And when he saves us, he takes us out of that miry pit and out of that miry clay in that horrible pit, and he sets our feet on rock, on a solid foundation. And not only does he set us on a solid foundation, on solid ground, on solid footing, on a rock, but he establishes our steps. As we go through our lives, he directs and guides and establishes us. It's interesting, you see these ideas oftentimes in the scriptures where it talks about God providing for them a flat way to walk on, and a straight way to walk down. That's something that dawned on me recently, is that if God makes the path in front of you straight, it's a lot easier to walk down than if he makes it all crooked and turning this way and that. It's a neat thing for God to do that for us, and that's what he does. He establishes our steps. He gives us level ground, solid rock, and he makes the way straight before us. So all we have to do is just follow him, and we'll go straight down the path he wants us to go down. It says that he waited patiently for the Lord. And the Lord inclined his ear to him and heard his cry. That's something about our God, is that he is willing to hear us. And not only does he hear us, but he inclines to us, right? Sometimes you talk to people and they're like, they're watching everybody else. Yeah. I'm bad about that, I'll have to admit. Kay gets on to me a lot when we're at restaurants, because I hear what's going on at all the other tables and don't hear what she's saying. And I go, was not the right answer to that question. God's not like that. He's not listening to all the other tables. Even though he is, really, he can hear everybody at once. But the idea here is that when God is listening to us, he inclines towards us. He listens intently to us. And when we wait on him and we speak to him, he will incline to us and he'll hear us when we cry out to him. And when he saves us from the horrible pit and the miry clay and puts our feet on a solid rock and establishes our steps, gives us a stable, flat, straight path to follow. Just follow him. When he does that, he also gives us with it a new song. A new song in our mouths to praise our God with. That's one thing that's kind of neat about the scriptures and what they teach us about our relationship with God. When we're close to him, a part of that relationship is a song. You see that with being filled with the Spirit, with letting the Word of Christ dwell in you richly. In both of those places where it talks about that, the next thing that it says is that you'll be singing with songs in your heart, singing to one another. And many people will see that. There are people that are watching us. They see our lives and what they're like. And when they see us and he heard our cry and he saved us from the horrible pit and the miry clay and he put our feet on solid ground and established our way and created within us a song and a desire and a praise for him, many people will see that and fear God and trust in the Lord. When we allow God to work in us in this way, that is one of the ways that God uses to testify of himself and of his truth and of his gospel and to lead people to himself. Many will see it and fear God and trust in the Lord. So that's how he kind of starts off here. And he tells us kind of how his relationship with God was established and how God saved him. And then he goes on to talk about that. He says, blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust and does not respect the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. Many, O Lord my God, are your wonderful works which you have done, and your thoughts toward us cannot be recounted to you in order. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. When we turn to the Lord, he will bless us if we make the Lord our trust. If we trust in other things, we miss out on that blessing. If we trust in ourselves, we trust in our job, we trust in our money, we trust in our family and our friends, then we can miss out on this blessing of God. God wants our primary trust not to be other people, not to be ourselves, not to be our money, not to be our possessions, not to be the country that we live in, but that our trust would be in the Lord. And when all of our trust is in him, we won't respect the proud, because the proud trust themselves and the things that they've accomplished and the things that they've accumulated. And we won't trust those who turn aside to lies. God has told us about the world and about himself and about the universe. And there are so many people in the world who turn aside to other ways. They deny his existence. They deny what he did. They deny who he is. And they turn aside to lies and they believe a lie rather than the truth. Those who trust in the Lord will not respect the proud, nor will they respect those who have turned aside to lies and follow them. They will only respect the Lord and the truth that he gives, and they will follow him. And when we do that, then we receive the blessing of God. And his blessing is great. It says, many, O Lord my God, are your wonderful works which you have done. God has done wonderful works from the beginning of creation and throughout time. He's done wonderful works on our behalf, and he continues to do so. He says, your thoughts toward us cannot be recounted to you in order. There's no way that we can enumerate all the things that God has done for us. And the thing about it is, with God, a thought and an action is the same thing. Whatever God thinks comes into being. All the things that God has done for us, we can't count them all. You know, we have that song, right? Count your blessings. And we can try and we can count blessings, but we can't count them all because they are beyond comprehension. They're innumerable. There's an infinite number of blessings that God has already blessed us with. God's thoughts towards us cannot be recounted, even if we tried. It says, if I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. And when we count our blessings, there's no end to them. And that's one of the great things about counting our blessings, right? Is that we begin to realize how numerable they actually are. Sometimes life gets the best of us and we get overwhelmed by things. And you see that in the Psalms. David expresses that kind of feeling. But when we recognize all that God has done for us, all the blessings that he has given us as we follow and trust in him, we begin to realize when we try to enumerate them, we try to explain them or express them or state them or count them, that there are so many of them that they cannot be numbered. They are beyond numbering and they are beyond our ability to even recount them all. And then he says, sacrifice and offering you do not desire. My ears you have opened. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you do not require. Then I said, behold, I come. In the scroll of the book it is written of me. I delight to do your will, O my God, and your law is within my heart. This is kind of an interesting section here. You see this through a lot of the Psalms, particularly the Psalms of David, where he would be going along, and this is clearly David expressing his feelings and his experiences and his desires, and then all of a sudden, he transitions into this section where you're like, what? Wait a minute. Is this David talking or is this Jesus talking? Right? And those are prophetic things that David said, and so and many of them you see Jesus do the same thing or say the same thing. This is one of those sections. It has two meanings to it. It is still David talking about himself and his experience of God, but at the same time, he's prophesying about Jesus. It's interesting here. He says, sacrifice an offering you do not desire. Burnt offering and sin offering you do not require. Wait a minute. I remember a whole lot of stuff in the Old Testament about sacrifices and offerings and all those things. What is he talking about here? He says in between those two, he says, my ears you have opened. You have brought me to a point to where I understand this. What is this that he understands? What he understands is what he says in that last part. I delight to do your will, O my God, and your law is within my heart. God never intended for there to be sacrifices and offerings. He never intended that there be burnt offerings and sin sacrifices. What he intended was for Adam and Eve and all of their descendants to do what? To delight in the will of God and for his law to fill their hearts and for them to follow it, right? That was what he intended. He never intended for all these sacrifices to have to happen. After men fell, these sacrifices became a part of what God required of people, not because the sacrifice would actually save them from their sins. You see that in Isaiah chapter 1 and in Hebrews chapter 9 and chapter 10. He talks about that the bulls of rams and goats cannot save anyone. What can save people? The blood of Jesus. And that blood of Jesus is applied to all those who put their faith in God, and that faith is counted to them as righteousness, just like Abraham did. So what David is talking about here concerning himself is, I now realize that what you desire from me is not the sacrifices and the offerings, the burnt offerings and the sin offerings. Those things I need to do if I have taken care of the real business, which is the business that Abraham started. Which was, he believed God, and God counted that to him for righteousness. That's what would cause him to be right before his God. Not the sin offerings and the sacrifices that he did of goats and bulls. And then knowing that one day God would provide the ultimate sacrifice. They knew that these sacrifices wouldn't actually take care of their sins. And you know why? Because they had to keep doing them. Year in and year out and year in and year out. If they actually took care of their sacrifices, they could have stopped at some point. And that's what Paul, or the writer of Hebrews, says. So David realized this, and he realized what was important was his faith in the Lord, which would be counted to him as righteousness, and that as a result, he would delight to do the will of God, and his law would be written in his heart. And this same idea is applied to Jesus. So that was from David's perspective. From Jesus' perspective, these sin offerings and the burnt offerings and the sacrifices would not actually deal with sin, but it was Jesus' sacrifice. And when he says, "Then I said, behold, I come. In the scroll of the book it is written of me." That's talking about Jesus. Jesus has come. The scriptures were written about him. Jesus delighted to do the will of God, and his law was written in his heart. He kept it completely throughout his life, and then he could be that sacrifice for sin. He goes on to talk about this. He says, "I have proclaimed the good news of righteousness in the great assembly." Does that sound familiar, the good news? That's the gospel. The word we use for gospel is good news. What is the good news of righteousness? The good news of righteousness is the righteousness of Abraham by faith. We believe God, and God counts that to us as righteousness, because all of our righteousness is what? Filthy rags. He understood this. His ears were opened, and God was able to reveal this to him so that he understood that what was important was that he believe in God and that he delight to do the will of the Father and to obey his law that's written in his heart. And then out of that heart of obedience and a desire to do his will, his sacrifices and offerings were acceptable to the Lord. That was the whole message of Isaiah chapter 1. Your sacrifices and offerings are an abomination to me. Your praises are an abomination to me, because your heart is not where it should be. It all starts there. It all starts with faith. Therefore, he says, "I've proclaimed this good news, this gospel of righteousness in the great assembly. Indeed, I do not restrain my lips, O Lord, you yourself know. I have not hidden your righteousness within my heart. I have declared your faithfulness and your salvation. I have not concealed your loving kindness and your truth from the great assembly." You see how he keeps emphasizing your? He says, "This isn't mine." He says, "I have told everybody about the good news of this righteousness. In the great assembly, I let everybody know. I don't restrain my lips. I have not hidden what? Your righteousness. The righteousness that comes from faith. I have not hidden your righteousness within my heart, but instead I have declared your faithfulness. I've declared your salvation. I have not concealed your loving kindness and your truth from all the people around me." This is the gospel as we know it. The good news of righteousness through faith. The salvation that comes from God and not from ourselves. The righteousness within our heart that comes from him. The faithfulness of our God, the love of our God that draws us to salvation. This is a message. This is the good news. This is the thing that we should be sharing with other people. This is the thing that David said, "I share your good news. I don't keep it to myself. I share it with all the people around me." And then he goes on. He says, "Do not withhold your tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let your loving kindness and your truth continually preserve me. For innumerable evils have surrounded me. My iniquities have overtaken me so that I'm not able to look up. They are more than the hairs of my head. Therefore, my heart fails me. Be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me. So here, this is this thing that we all experience. There are times in our lives where we become overwhelmed by things, right? And he gives two categories of things that tend to overwhelm us. And he's calling out to the Lord and saying, Lord, have mercy on me. Help me. Be with me. Help me through these difficulties as I try to live for you and I follow the path that you laid out before me. It says, first of all, don't withhold your tender mercies from me. Just have mercy on me and help me in these things. Let your loving kindness and your truth continually preserve me. There are two things that preserve us and keep us for the Lord. First of all, it's his love that never fails, right? Because if his love did not never fail, he would let us all go, right? Because he should, but he doesn't. The second thing that preserves us is not just his love that never fails, but it's his truth within our hearts. It's his truth revealed in his word. Those are the two things that can preserve us. His love and his truth. For or because, the reason why he's calling out for mercy and for God's love and his truth to preserve him is that there are two things going on. One, innumerable evils have surrounded him. And two, my iniquities have overtaken me so that I am not able to look up. We see that in the world around us. Innumerable evils have surrounded us. As we look around ourselves in the world and we look in our country today and we see the degradation that's going on, we can see around us innumerable evils that have surrounded us. But not just out there somewhere else. They're also in close, right? They're all around us. Everywhere we go, every day. We're exposed to innumerable evils. Our society has done a tremendous job. Satan has done a tremendous job in the world system of our society of inundating us with innumerable evils through every medium we can think of. We can't go. You go through the grocery store line and you're evils just right there in your face. No matter where you go, no matter what thing you turn on for entertainment, no matter what music station you turn to, no matter where you go, there are innumerable evils surrounding us and pressing in on us. That's nothing new. We tend to think, oh, it's never been like this before. David was experiencing innumerable evils around him too, thousands of years ago. It's always been that way. Satan is always working to surround us with innumerable evils. But not only are there things that we need to be preserved from that are outside of us, but we need to be preserved from what is inside of us as well, right? Even though he has saved us by our faith, he hasn't fully transformed us into the image of Christ yet. He hasn't completely removed that sin nature. So within us, and Paul talked about that in Romans chapter 7, right? He finds within himself a law that when he would do good, that evil is present with him. Who will deliver me from this body of death? David was experiencing that same thing thousands of years before Paul did, and we're experiencing it thousands of years later. There is within us iniquities that have a tendency to overtake us. And when we're surrounded by this evil in the world and the iniquity, that the sin that's within us tries to overtake us, oftentimes we come to a place where we just feel like we can't even look up. We're just so ashamed and we're so overwhelmed by the situation that we're in. Says these evils that surround us and this iniquity that's within us, says they are more than the hairs of my head. You guys are in worse shape than me. Just a joke. My head don't have many hairs left. But they are more than the hairs of my head. There are tremendous numbers of them. Therefore, my heart fails me. we come to this place where we don't feel like we can look up. Our heart within us feels like it's failing. So we cry out to our God and say, be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me. And when we call out to our God, He will deliver us. When we call out to our God, He will help us, because our God is a faithful God. Though we are often faithless, He is still faithful, it says in one place, because He cannot deny Himself. That's the awesome thing about our God. He is who He is. He is a faithful God. And even when we're unfaithful, He's still faithful. Because that's who He is. He can't deny who He is. And He will deliver us. He will help us. He will lift us up in that place where we feel completely overwhelmed. And He finishes with, let all those who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. Let such as love your salvation say continually, the Lord be magnified. But I am poor and needy, yet the Lord thinks upon me. You are my help and my deliverer. Do not delay, O my God. Let all of us who seek the Lord rejoice and be glad in Him, knowing that He will deliver us, that He will help us, that He is faithful, that His loving kindness lasts forever. That His loving kindness will preserve us, that His truth will preserve us. So we should rejoice and be glad in Him. And if we have received His salvation and we love Him for it, then we should magnify His name and cry out in praise, let the Lord be magnified. And even though each of us is so small, so poor and needy, yet the Lord thinks upon me. That's a neat thought. It's the same idea that we see in the New Testament where it says, if God knows about every little sparrow, and every time they die, He's watching them hop around. Every time one dies, He knows about every one of them. If God knows about every hair on our head, and He knows when each one falls out, if God knows those things, how much more does He know about us and care, right? That's the same idea here. He says, I am small and poor and needy, yet the Lord thinks on me. I am insignificant compared to God, yet God thinks about me. He inclines His ear to me. He hears my prayers. He pays attention to me. The Lord thinks on us, and He is our help and our deliverer, and we need Him now. Do not delay. Come now, Lord. That should be our desire and our prayer. So I think it's really neat here how David opens himself up to us, kind of helps us to see himself and the way that he thinks and the experiences that he's gone through, and for us to be able to learn from that as well. He waited on the Lord, and the Lord saved him out of a horrible pit and a miry clay. He saved him and He lifted him up and He put his feet on a rock and He established a path before him for his steps to walk on. He made it flat and He made it straight. The Lord put a song in his mouth and made him a witness to his saving grace. And when we are His, and we put our trust in Him, then He will bless us. He will bless us so much that we can't even express all the ways that He's blessed us. We can't number them. We can't repeat them and list them out for people because they are innumerable. What God desires from us is a heart that seeks Him. What God desires from us is a heart that delights in doing His will. What God desires from us is a heart that loves the truth. A heart that he can write his law on and we will obey it. And if we are that person, then he will accept our sacrifices and offerings. Then he will accept the things that we do for him. But if we don't have a heart like that, it doesn't matter what we do for him, he's not going to accept it. Remember when he told those that on his left and on his right? They said, we did this in your name. We did that in your name. We did all these things. And he said, I never knew you. It's not the things that we do. It's the heart that's willing to follow his leading and his will. Then the things that we do matter. When we have this in our heart and we're living it out, then we should share it with others. We should proclaim this good news of God's righteousness to everyone that we can, to the great assembly of people that are around us, that are watching us. We should not conceal his loving kindness and his truth, but we should share it. And as we go through our life, even after we get saved, there's going to be really difficult times. There's going to be times when we're pressed from the outside. There's going to be times when the sin that's within us is overwhelming us. And when we're in that place and we don't even feel like we can look up, and that the things that are oppressing us are more than the hairs of our head, that's when we call out to our God to deliver us, to help us, to come to us now, and he will be faithful to do so. Because our God is full of loving kindness and mercy, and it will follow us all the days of our lives.